to assess the Yankees here at the All-Star break and to look ahead to the trade deadline and discuss the work they still have to do. We bring in Pete Caldera, covers the Yankees for the Bergen Record. Hey, Pete, how are you?
I'm great, Laurie. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. Pete, how many years have you been covering the Yankees?
Too long. Probably. I got there the week after they traded for Aaron Boone, believe it or not. So, yeah, late in the 2003 season, right after the trade deadline.
All right. So it's been over 20 years. And so I wanted to know your sense with that perspective of having covered a lot of Yankee seasons. How does this team compare to some others that we've seen at the deadline, understanding that the Yankees' goal is always to win a World Series?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Just the way you see it in front of you is that it's a team that's good enough to get to October and make a deep run, but it needs help. And they've certainly identified the areas where they do need help, but it's, it's the pitching of all kinds and right-handed hitter, third baseman. But there's a lot of teams in this market that are looking for the same thing, and there's more contenders out there in these markets probably than there ever have been, based on the way the playoffs are structured now and the competition for the talent that's out there. And, I don't think it's a very deep or exciting talent pool in a lot of respects. So it certainly is a market for sellers, and just who those sellers are is still really to be seen. As close as we are to the July 31st trade deadline, I think some teams still need to declare whether they're in or out, or they're going to be partial sellers. And how that really manifests itself. So it will be fascinating over these next few weeks when teams do declare where they're going to be. But certainly I think the Yankees do need help to get to where they want to go. And I think they'll try to be very aggressive to get that help. And we heard Brian Cashman say pretty much words to that effect a few days ago, that sounds like they'll be pretty aggressive trying to find what they need.
So we'll talk about some of those specifics in a moment as we look at big picture and assess the Yankees here at the All-Star break. One of the storylines that in some ways maybe we get used to, so it's easy to gloss over, but Aaron Judge, and just this weekend, as an example, became the fastest player ever to hit 350 home runs in a career. You've seen A-Rod play. He's one behind A-Rod now on the Yankee list of all-time home runs. When you watch Judge every day, what do you appreciate most?
His consistency and his... There's the two Judges you see. There's the Judge and that has the impact in the clubhouse and on his teammates in a daily way, and the way he goes about his work, the way he conducts himself, and the way he sort of takes an interest in everybody on that team, from the 26th player to the superstars and everyone in between that's on the staffs of the club and in the stadium. And then there's the Judge you see on the field that's, back in right field now. I mean, you see what an above average player is defensively at that position again, and what he just did this week, making three spectacular catches and the smart plays. I mean, he threw a ball today. The effortless way he goes about making his throws, and putting him on the money, and making plays that shouldn't be close, that's amazing to watch. But of course, what he's doing at the plate, I mean, it's been said and it's probably true. I know my grandfather told me about watching Babe Ruth in the late 20s and early 30s and going to Yankee Stadium as a kid, taking the subway and watching Ruth and Garrett play. And now I sort of know how he felt watching what Judge is doing, because it's on that level. And you see the names he's up there with every time it's another home run. It seems like it's another milestone. It's another achievement. It's another record. It's another step closer to all these immortal players you heard about and never saw, but you're seeing it now with Judge. But yeah, his consistency and I guess his general humility are what really impresses you, because I mean, obviously the talent is otherworldly and likely not to see it, but a talent like that come around in a very long time.
I think that the way you just worded that is a good definition of a generational player, which is a term that we see bandied about. I was going back and forth with someone on social media about this, and it's true. It's like they can't, you know, 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 players can't be generational players all at the same time, or it, you know, they're not, you know, the whole point is it's supposed to be of this generation, even if we want to say of a 25-year period or a 20-year period or a decade. Like, somebody's got to be generational. It can't be multiple players. But Aaron Judge really feels like he is that. So that's a plus. Obviously, there are a number of positives to this Yankee team. But as we hit the All-Star break, do the Yankees have a shortstop problem?
I mean, it's a fair question. I think they have a shortstop that's in a defensive slump, and you know, just looking at, you know, what he's done at the plate lately too, since really the end of May, he's hitting about 170 with a under 550 OPS too. You know, after he'd, you know, it looked like, you know, the thing with Volpe is, at least offensively, you've seen this, you've seen him go into the deep valleys where, you know, he can't buy a hit or a walk for weeks, and then he comes out of it, and but then he goes back, you know down the slide again. We were seeing a little less of that early in the first half. The dips weren't so deep, and there was a little more consistency to his offensive game. You know, defensively, I mean, I'd still want the ball hit to Anthony Volpe. I still think it's the same Gold Glove shortstop you saw his rookie year. I thought he was a better defensive player last year in his sophomore season, and he didn't win the Gold Glove. I still think this is an above average shortstop. I mean, there are certain aspects to his game that I guess he does need to clean up. Like we saw today, some hesitancy on, you know, laying back on ground balls, and you know, he doesn't have Jazz Chisholm on his arm. You know, he can't make up for, you know, certain plays, you know, based on arm strength. He's got to be quick with his feet and react. And you know, you saw him make an excellent play in the hole at shortstop today too, to make a forced play at second base. You know, you still see the good with the not so good with Volpe. I would just chalk it up to now that maybe some things are in his head a little bit, being a little hesitant in his play. I'd still trust him over the long haul. It's I think to me it's more the question of what type of offensive player is he going to be. Can you get him to stop pulling the ball and taking some of the swing and miss out of his game, and you know, letting, you know, somehow finding a way more consistently to use the whole field, shoot the ball to right field, use your gift of stealing bases again, because that's an aspect of his game we haven't seen this year, even though his on base has generally been a little higher this year. And that's another aspect of his game he's got to work at. You know, it's, you know, deep into year three, and he's still a very young player. I think we know less about his offensive makeup than we do anything else. What type of offensive player is this going to be? And is he going to ascend to an all-star level, or are we looking at some, you know, just a regular, everyday, steady player? And you can win with, you can win with shortstops that, that catch the ball and do nothing else. I'm old enough to remember on the 1986 Mets, Rafael Santana, mm-hmm. you know, wouldn't knock your socks off with any aspect of his play, but he made all the plays that needed to be made, and he's got a World Series ring to prove it. So, but I think we're still kind of wondering what type of offensive player Anthony Volpe is going to be, and if he can, you know, sort of open up the field for him a little more and allow him to use his, you know, his running ability on the bases, you know, create some havoc there. I think you'll find a better player there.
Talking to Pete Caldera about the Yankees at the All-Star break, and one player I've been impressed with, and I know, you know, sometimes the numbers, ERA, you know, all it takes is a bad start or two, and it can, you know, obviously an ERA can inflate, but I've been impressed with Will Warren and how he recovers and adjusts when he struggles. What has impressed you about Will Warren so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's learning on the job, basically, you know, not really projected to be in this mm-hmm. rotation, certainly not this early, but you know, the early season injuries to Cole and Heal and Stroman, you know, opened the lane for him, and he's had to do a lot of, you know, learning on the job. You know, he had a cameo basically last year, what was it, 5 or 6 starts, and mm-hmm. there wasn't a whole lot good there, except for the experience you got from being out there. You're right. I think this year he's learned how to adjust. You know, certainly, you know, you remember that Dodger start when he basically couldn't get anybody out in the first inning, and then bounced right back and had, you know, and looked good. He's, you know, he's as good as he's looked. He's right. He's been roughed up, but it hasn't scarred him. I think it's made him, you know, it's made him go back to the drawing board and look at video and talk to his pitching coach, talk to his catchers, and find a way to navigate another way through a big league lineup. And he's certainly got the tools to do it, because you can't fake swing and miss, and he's got that mm-hmm. in his arsenal. And when you have that, when you start with that, and I think he generally has good command, that you know, you're going to build yourself, you know, a pretty reliable back end of the rotation starter. I would also think that other teams have drawn notice of that too. And when the Yankees start calling teams for things that they need, Will Warren's name's probably going to be coming up in those conversations too.
Yeah, it's only going to create another problem. So I don't think they would make that move, but yeah, you have to give to get. What did the move to cut DJ LeMahieu, to DFA him, tell you about the Yankee mindset and Brian Cashman's mindset right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, to begin with, I wasn't really understanding what the experiment was to move Jazz Chisholm off of a natural position he preferred playing and was mm-hmm. was good at, and to sort of weaken yourselves at two positions and not one. But then when it came to light more what the conversations that were going on internally between LeMahieu and Boone and Cashman were like, you sort of understood it a bit.
Were you surprised in the way they worded it? It made it seem like like DJ LeMahieu was physically not capable of playing third base. We saw the range issues at second, but at third, like, I guess they were saying he could not make that throw from third base. Does that seem surprising to you?
It did. But then when you hear it, that it came from LeMahieu and not the club projecting that on him, it kind of changed things. But I think, Lori, that eventually we were coming to this outcome anyway. If you had a healthy Jazz Chisholm, right. you were gonna have to make a decision on LeMahieu, because you couldn't live with playing another player, an all-star player, out of position,
right?
And not getting any range or any production, even though LeMahieu was hitting 300 since June 1st, not getting any real run production out of his spot in the batting order too. So, you know, either way, you know, sooner or later we were coming to this conclusion, or they were going to find a solution at the trade deadline and replace LeMahieu that way. So I think we were going to get here. It's just how we got here, you know, the abruptness of it, seemingly from last week, you know, I guess took us a bit by surprise, but I think it was coming to this.
As you said earlier, Brian Cashman, based on his remarks, has said the Yankees are going to be aggressive. You wrote an article in The Record that is about the Yankees have a lot of work to do. So here they are at the, you know, trade deadline's going to be in a couple of weeks. A lot of work to do. Brian Cashman says he's going to be aggressive. And yet you said earlier, and I think that's consistent with what I've been hearing as well, is that, you know, with so many teams thinking they still have a chance for a wild card, we're not sure how much inventory there is that's going to be sold. So with that context, what would be a successful trade deadline in your mind for the Yankees? If you're a Yankee fan and you want to try and be realistic with your expectations, what would success look like?
Well, I think a real success, I mean, I think an A grade trade deadline would be to, you know, get at least one starter of import, two relievers of import, and one who throws left-handed, because I think, you know, Tim Hill's kind of out on an island over there and probably steadily getting overworked. You know, you're going to need somebody in that bullpen to combat lefties as a complement to him, and a right-handed hitting third baseman I think would be preferable. I think this lineup still has a vulnerability against left-handed starters, and you saw it this weekend. Mm-hmm. Yep. With what Imanaga and Boyd of the Cubs did to them this weekend. So. You know, you're gonna only face you know, better quality starting pitching like that once you get into October, and you're gonna need a way to combat that. So I think those things would be high on my list. But I think if I had to stack them or rank them for what I really need right now, I think the Yankees need for impact relief pitching it would be paramount on my list.
And with that in mind, some of the top prospects and the names that you see thrown around, I think coming off of certainly seeing him in the Futures game, should we assume George Lombard Jr. is, I don't want to say maybe untouchable, but highly, highly unlikely that the Yankees would move him for anything at this deadline?
I mean, first of all, I don't think they could ever get anything near, you know, what you would even put a price tag on as equal value in their opinion for a guy like Lombard. So yeah, I don't think that's a player that they would move at the trade deadline.
What about Spencer Jones? Is that potentially in play?
Spencer Jones now. Yeah, I think he is. I think he would be in play now. You know, they're with their outfield situation now and with And you know, how do you project? I mean, you talk to scouts. I mean, they love the raw physical tools. You know, a guy that big, you know, who's got you know unlimited power and can run and can play a good center field. But you know, how he projects beyond AAA, we've seen him struggle at the minor league level, and now you know he's really come on now. And certainly, I mean, this is a great time, if you're a Yankee executive, for a guy like Jones to really, you know, show what you expected his value to be, or at least hoped it would be, because, you know, now that price tag on him is maybe a little higher, and if that's the difference between making an impact deal or putting a guy like him in a package deal that outweighs another contender's, you got to seriously consider it. So I certainly do think that that Spencer Jones would be probably more in play now, expendable in a impact trade than probably at any point since he's been Yankee property. But yeah, I would certainly think that Lombard is about as untouchable as you can get as a Yankee prospect.
All right, Pete Caldera from The Record covering the Yankees. Really appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you soon.
Sounds great, Lori. Thanks again. Appreciate it.
All right.